Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's finally tournament week for the Big Ten. Welcome in to the BadgerBlitz.com podcast. Thank you, as always, for listening and downloading the show. I'm your host, Benjamin Wargle, the Wisconsin football and men's basketball beat writer for Rivals.com. Every team is 0-0. You can erase that regular season. Of course, if you're listening to this Wednesday night or Thursday morning, some teams have already been eliminated from the Big Ten tournament. I mean, heck, on the women's side, Wisconsin women were eliminated yesterday and already fired their coach. And Jonathan Sipas. So March Madness indeed at the University of Wisconsin. The men's basketball team was certainly PO'd. They were mad on Sunday following their loss at Iowa, where head coach Greg Gard went nuclear on the Big Ten, the officiating crew, which include our old friend Bo Borowski, and the hook and hold rule, which he says is making a mockery of college basketball. We're going to get into that here in just a minute. Our guest this week is one of my all-time favorite players that I've covered, Jared Bergeron, the former center out of Minnesota who came to the Wisconsin, played for 5 years, including his redshirt year, left as the school's all-time leader in blocks. He was a second-team all-conference pick, all-defensive player. We're going to talk about the hook and hold rule. We're going to talk about officiating. How do you overcome bad officials? How do you overcome a lack of confidence when shots aren't falling? He should know. In his senior season, Wisconsin played 7 games in the 40s, including 3 straight in Big Ten play. That was kind of the precursor to the back-to-back Final Four runs. And now Jared Bergeron is a trainer. He is teaching young kids how to play basketball. So excited to have Jared on here in just a couple minutes. But we got to talk about Sunday, just a little bit. Want to move the page into the Big Ten tournament. Wisconsin is going to play on Thursday night against either Penn State or Nebraska. We'll find that out later tonight. I'm recording this on Wednesday morning. And Wisconsin will be favored in that game, and hopefully will have a little bit of confidence, a little bit of fire in their step. They swept Nebraska, the last place team in the league, and they split against Penn State. That was at home and home series in late January, where Wisconsin lost in State College and then came back and played much better at home against the Nittany Lions. And then they'll get a shot at Iowa if they win. And I bet you this Badger team would like another shot at Iowa. Wisconsin played so poorly at the Kohl Center against the Hawkeyes that you kind of wondered where they were going to be in this regular season finale. The game didn't mean anything. Based on Rutgers beating Minnesota in overtime the day before, Wisconsin was locked into the sixth seed. Wisconsin won the head-to-head matchup with Rutgers. They had and if it was a three-way tie with Maryland, Wisconsin won that tiebreaker as well. So Wisconsin was locked in the sixth seed. Iowa really wasn't playing for anything either. They already had the double bye locked up. By winning, they moved from the four seed to the three. So, I mean, there was a little bit. But in terms of a bad loss or anything like that, it really didn't matter. However, Wisconsin needed to win this game just to get some good feeling, some good momentum going into the game. And I would argue, even though they lost, they are still fired up and they're ready to go based on what happened in the final 2 minutes of the game. The final 36 seconds took about 11 and a half minutes, according to the stopwatch of play-by-play voice Matt LePay of Learfield College, covering Wisconsin for many, many years, which just shows you how ridiculous this ending of this game was. And it started, too, with Bo Borowski, who I don't think has a vendetta against Wisconsin. I just think he's a bad official. And that maybe he has a vendetta against Brad Davison, because there's been some plays throughout the course of this season that Brad Davison has been involved in with Bo Borowski officiating that have not gone Wisconsin's way. And I'm not saying conspiracy theory. I'm not saying anything like that. But I'm just pointing out the facts that Bo Borowski has called some very iffy calls against Brad Davison. And Bo Borowski is 7-0 for the other team in games he officiates with Wisconsin in Big Ten play. Wisconsin didn't win a single game where he was official. Now, some of that has to do with shots, but certainly the last 2 minutes, or really the last minute of the game, was quite bizarre and really ruined, in my opinion, a really good college basketball game. It started with a foul call on Demetric Trice, This was a very physical game. And the second half alone, there was a ton of whistles, a ton of stoppages, a ton of replay reviews, which is also ridiculous to me, how there is no challenge system in college basketball. There's a challenge system in professional sports, baseball, hockey, NFL, NBA. There's a replay in college football. There's a replay in college volleyball, for crying out loud. How is there no replay in college basketball that you can ask for unlimited reviews and the like? But the second half, 14 fouls were called on Wisconsin, and I think 10 were called on Iowa. So, but there's just a lot of whistles, a lot of stoppages, just no real flow the last couple minutes of the game. And it ruined a good game because Iowa's averaging 1.4 points per possession. Wisconsin put their best second half in a long time. They averaged 1.5 points per possession. They shot 53% from the field. The ball movement was better. 11 assists on 16 field goals. They got to the free throw line and they made their free throws. They went 7 of 13 from 3-point range. This was a good half of basketball where Wisconsin played up to their potential. This is the Wisconsin team we thought we were going to see for the Big Ten season. And it didn't really show up until the last 20 minutes of the regular season. But Aleem Ford missed a box out when it was 71-71 that kind of caused the domino effect to happen here, where on that next possession, Joran Bohan was fouled by Trice. And I say fouled in the loosest term possible. Trice kind of nicked him a little bit before the shooting motion, and Bo Borowski made the call. It was a bad call, considering how the game was going. Did he foul him? Did he come into contact with him? Absolutely. But considering where the foul happened in the game, considering who the official was, considering what was called and what wasn't called leading up to that, it was out of place. And of course, Joran Bohan shoots 87% from the free throw line, makes all three free throws, so Wisconsin is in a little bit of a heap of trouble here. On the next possession, this is where the issues for Greg Gard really started. Brad Davison beats Keegan Murray on a drive to the basket, and as the pass is coming to him in the lane, Murray kind of sticks his arm into the passing lane and kind of between Davison's elbow and his body, if you watch it, and initiates a hook and hold because Davison can't go up for the ball with two hands, so he's kind of hooked. Murray, one hand, the foul is called on Iowa, on Murray. Murray immediately goes telltale, hey, he hit me first, to the officials. The officials went to the monitor to review, a lengthy review, and they ruled that Davison was called for a hook and hold, which means Davison shot two free throws, Iowa shot two free throws and got the ball back. So instead of Wisconsin going to the line and kind of lead to one, they had the lead back to three and they had possession of the ball. And Greg Gard was furious. You could see him mouthing at on the monitor, you do this all the time. This is, you know, insert your four-letter words here. It was frustrating to watch because it ruined a good game. And a lot of people weighed in on this too. People that don't cover Wisconsin, national people, Big Ten people, in terms of analysts, not anything from the Big Ten office. The Big Ten office has not commented. They won't comment on this. And it was frustrating to see how the momentum of the game was disjointed. The players, Wisconsin players, said so afterwards too, that it was hard to get into a rhythm late. And certainly Greg Gard was upset. And Greg Gard, for those that aren't aware, is very mild-mannered with us in the media. He's like Bo. He never publicly calls out players. He chooses to do that privately. He never really loses his temper. So when he started off his opening comments calling it a joke, a character assassination of Brad Davison, calling the hook and hold a Brad Davison rule, say the rule's making it a mockery of the game, it was very eye-opening, and it caught a lot of people's attention. I'm going to play for you now what Gard said post-game. These are all of his comments regarding the rule, Brad Davison, and the officiating crew.
You know, the area that I really want to address beginning, maybe people have questions about it, is the mockery that has now been made of the hook and hold or any type of thing, and it appears to have become a Brad Davison rule, where it's become, quite frankly, a joke. Anytime there's a foul or a question, the opponents are yelling to the officials about the monitor, to go to the monitor. I saw the play. if college basketball is headed in this direction, we're in big trouble. It sickens me that we have games decided like this, and this is where it's at. That rule was not put in place for that. That was for safety of players. That was for post-play. Those type of things happen on every single possession of the game, specifically in the post. So I think it's really turned into a joke. I feel bad for Brad Davison. The kid's a great kid, plays his ass off. But he continues to get screwed by this and how the officials and the league and opponents have continued to just call that out and spotlight, put a spotlight on that and deaden the ball. And it's become sickening, really. It's made a mockery of college basketball, specifically in the positions we've been in. Like I said, I think this is, and this isn't the first time. This has been 3 years of this stuff with Brad. Where it's constantly, it's not just, it's unfortunately, it's been, that's been pinned on him, and now it becomes a weapon, and the officials have allowed it to become a weapon for an opponent.
Well, Greg, I know you've commented on your thoughts, but can you at least explain to us what the explanation was on that play where he's on the hook and hold? He's trying to catch the pass.
Yeah, he's trying to catch the pass, and actually Murray's arm has his arm. Murray's arm is in an L. Brad's arm is straight. He has to try to catch it with one hand. Neither Murray doesn't fall down. Nobody's in danger of getting hurt. Like I said, it's become something that anybody can call out on. They can go to, they request the monitor, and like I said, I don't know if they keep track of monitor requests, but if Brad Davison doesn't lead the country in it, and like I said, that's why it's become a mockery, because it's constantly this, and like I said, in this position, that rule, that should not decide basketball games when it's that type of play.
Greg, with all the reviews, is it hard at the end of the game there to kind of keep the momentum going? It seemed like the game itself was going back and forth kind of up until about 2 minutes left, and then that 2 minutes took a long time, and it seemed like it kind of threw off maybe what you guys might have had going offensively, even what Iowa had going offensively. It seemed like you just kind of halted everything.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to the monitor all the time. I mean, it's just, like I said, it's just need to call the game as it happens. And so we're going to the monitor for everything. It's just like you have a pocket full of monitor requests anymore. So, and an endless pocket full of monitor requests. It's like you can request it on every single time and free shooters and do anything with it. So it's just, that's something that's got to be addressed because it's gotten out of hand.
Yeah, Greg, I assume you're anticipating you're going to hear something from the league today. Do you care about that? And are you worried at all about how games might be officiated in the Big Ten tournament because of what you said?
Well, I'm just trying to protect a player that is constantly, they've put a spotlight on him, and I've asked the league to stop it, and they've allowed it to get out of hand. And the character of the kid now, with what ESPN did with their Wikipedia thing during one of the games that we had, if it was Michigan or was it, I mean, that, and ESPN can issue all the apologies they want. The kid's a great kid. He's done a phenomenal job for our program. He's been a great representative of this university, and I'm just tired of him constantly getting put in that light. And it's got to stop. So I'll be on the phone. I'll be happy to take a call from the league. They know my number. They know where I'm at. But this has gotten, like I said, this has gotten ridiculous where we've gotten TV now, putting up stuff on Wikipedia with a false Wikipedia page. And I got apologies from ESPN. I got apologies from Bob Wischusen and Dick Vitale and the producer and all that. That's great. But they continue to take shots at the kid. And that's where enough's enough. I'm tired of it. I'm going to call it out when it happens, and I'm calling it out today.
So as you can hear there, that's very passionate, and he's very angry about it. And we talked to Coach Gard on Tuesday, and he said he talked to league office. It was a good dialogue, and they're moving forward. But no fine has been announced by the Big Ten, so it's assuming that the Big Ten maybe knows that he's right, and they're choosing not to fine him. And it's one of those things where you feel bad for Brad Davison, because I know Brad Davison. I covered Brad Davison in high school through the recruiting process and throughout his 25 years here at the University of Wisconsin, it feels like. He's a good kid. He's always good with the media. He's always honest with the media. And he does a ton of community service work. He does a lot of things behind the scenes that people don't know. He plays hard. And because he plays hard, he puts himself in these positions that a lot of people don't, and issues arise from that. He certainly has hit people in the groin area before. It happened with Joey Hauser two years ago, I believe. It happened with Connor McCaffrey last year, both times fighting through screens, and both don't look the greatest. Davison is honest and says that they were not on purpose. They're purely unintentional. I tend to believe him. And I think Brad Davison has been under a different microscope since that 5-charge game he took against NC State. You remember the rest of that season that Davison rarely got a lot of charge calls. A lot were blocking calls. And I think that's where you heard guard say character assassination. That's kind of where it started. And the hook and hold rule, you could see teams when those situations kind of come up involving Davison, they want a monitor call. They want a monitor review. And like I said before, how do you not have some sort of replay system in college basketball that the last 30 seconds should not take over 11 minutes to play? It's one of these things where Davison has been put under the microscope, and you could see it too by opposing fan bases, by Wisconsin's own fan base. I see it on Twitter all the time that people are tired of Brad Davison. They want to see Brad Davison move on. But I don't think he's a dirty player. I think he plays hard. And I think that because he plays hard, it rubs people the wrong way, because a lot of people don't play the way Brad Davison does. Has he gotten himself into some sticky PR situations? Absolutely he has. But that's because he's fighting to get through screens, and maybe sometimes the technique isn't there, and sometimes it's a slippage in technique, and it looks dirty. But to compare him to Grayson Allen, that crybaby from Duke, I don't think is a fair comparison at all. And I applaud guard for defending him. He's defended him twice now in the last year and a couple months. He defended him last year, last January, after Davison, because of that hit on McCaffrey, was suspended. And I believe the language used by the Big Ten for repeated violations of the sportsmanship rule, Wisconsin ended up winning the game against Michigan State without Davison in it last year, and that kind of sparked their 9-1 finish down the stretch. And the players appreciate it too. We heard from Micah Potter after the game, who said that he heard the comments and said that we're going to play for guard because we know guard's going to have our back. Tyler Wall and Demetri Trice on Tuesday both spoke out in favor of that. Trice said that he went out after he heard the comments and thanked guard for those comments. And because of it, there's a bounce in the step of the players. You can tell, even though they've lost 3 straight and 5 of 6, and they're unranked in the AP poll for the first time all season, that this group is confident going into this Big Ten tournament. They feel confident. There's a swagger at practice. We can't see practice anymore because of COVID, but this is something that the players have said, that they can feel an energy in practice. Brad Davison, we haven't spoken to him since Sunday, but Demetri Trice said Brad Davison is as happy as he can be because he saw his coach stick his neck out for him and defend his character. And you have to kind of wonder from the outside looking at where this Wisconsin team is, because they're 16-11, they're 10-10 in Big Ten play. First time they haven't had a win season in Big Ten play in I believe 3 years. They've let a lot of winnable games kind of slip away, especially at home where they were just 5-5 in Big Ten play. But they played better this last week. And I think anyone who's watched them objectively can see that the ball movement has been better. The scoring balance has been better. And they've been doing it really without Demetri Trice playing up to his potential. Trice has not scored in the first half of the last 2 games, but yet other players have stepped in. Micah Potter played fantastic against Iowa. I thought you saw Jonathan Davis take a nice step forward against the Hawkeyes, especially in the second half. Tyler Wall is playing better. He had really 2 pretty good games. There's still some players who are having issues. Nate Reavers is having issues, continues to have issues, I should say. Aleem Ford is stuck in a shooting slump. Trevor Anderson has been kind of up and down. So there's still some players on this team that are struggling, but there are a number of players that have started to kind of step out of that funk. Brad Davison had a really nice game against the Hawkeyes. I mean, really. The second half, He hits a couple three-pointers, three rebounds, two assists. You look at his overall body work, 14 points, 5 of 10 from the field. That's the first time he shot at least 50% from the field since Christmas Day against Michigan State. So that's encouraging moving forward. He plays 37 minutes, two steals thrown in there too. There's some good things that you can start to see being built upon. But it's just those little things. It's a lean forward missing a blockout. A little bit of calls here and there. The inability to box out here and there or lay on the screen to open up a three-pointer, different things like that. That kind of has kept Wisconsin from winning some of these games. In past years, they win these type of games. But because the Big Ten's so good with so many quality teams at the top, I mean, you look at the top three teams in the league, these are all Final Four caliber teams. Ohio State has the potential to be a Final Four team if they can get out of this rut that they're in. Purdue's kind of a wild card because they're so young, but they've played really well this year. So really, the top four or five teams in this league could be Elite Eight teams. And Wisconsin went 0-8 against them because of these small little things. But the last week has been better, and I think that's what's encouraging for this team going into this tournament playing on Thursday night against Penn State and Nebraska. Can you take that momentum, that anger, that angst, that those comments that maybe that Demetri Trice said lit a fire under this team, can you carry that through a long stay in Indianapolis? And it's going to be a long stay because whenever Wisconsin loses in the Big Ten tournament or if they win the Big Ten tournament, they're staying in Indianapolis. They're quarantined in Indianapolis for the rest of the season. So if they somehow make it to the Final Four, they're going to be in Indianapolis for weeks. So pack your Xbox, pack your reading material. It's going to be a long trip for them. At least that's what they're hoping. And based on how they played as of the last couple weeks, or last couple games, I should say, it's encouraging to think that they could get there, that they could make a run if they can continue to kind of hold on to this confidence, hold on to this anger that they have in them, and they can continue to hit shots. If they can build upon that second half against Iowa, this team can beat whoever they play on Thursday night. They can beat Iowa, and then maybe who knows what you can do against Illinois. You play better against Illinois in Madison. Of course, you didn't have Io DeSumo in that game, and I think Illinois is the best team in the Big Ten. Who knows? And then when we get to the tournament, we'll talk about the NCAA tournament next week, maybe a different conference team, a team from who knows where, Missouri Valley, ACC, pick your conference, that's not the Big Ten. Maybe that's going to be the breath of fresh air that Wisconsin needs to put something together. Because no matter what you think about this team, no matter how much they've underachieved, it's still six seniors, many of whom are playing their last games. They played a lot of basketball together, and they won a Big Ten championship together last year. They know how to do it, and the second half against Iowa gives me a little bit of courage, a little bit of confidence to say that maybe my prediction that this team would lose their, would go 2-2 in postseason play, maybe they're going to prove me wrong. And I'm anxious to kind of see what this team is going to do in Indianapolis here this weekend.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You are listening to the BadgerBlitz.com podcast. Before I get to Jared Berger, I want to touch on it. It's Wisconsin Pro Day today on Wednesday, March 10th. It's going on now before I record this, so I don't have any official stats for you, but a number of NFL hopefuls are participating, and that Pro Day is closed to the media, but we'll have full coverage up on the site, BadgerBlitz.com. I'll address it too next week. I mentioned women's basketball has fired their head coach. That ends my women's basketball segment on this podcast. Wisconsin volleyball is going to be back this weekend after a two-week layoff. They're still the number one team in the country. And how about Wisconsin women's hockey? They won the WCHA tournament. They beat Ohio State in overtime. And the men win the Big Ten over Minnesota for the first time since 2000. They won a regular season conference championship. That's back in WCHA days. that the fourth conference championship for the men in school history. So big congratulations to them. And it's all because Brian Posick was on the podcast. I think Posick, the words of Posick on this show encouraged the men to go out there and just to take care of business the last couple of weekends. So we'll get Brian on maybe in a week or two, too, to kind of preview some different things. But a lot of good news surrounding the University of Wisconsin and in all their sports, including, I'll bring it back, women's basketball. Women's basketball was good decades ago. It can be good again. The talent is there, but goodness, have they really whiffed on the last two hires. If you are interested, submit your resumes now at jobs.wis.edu.
My guest this week appeared in 119 career games for the University of Wisconsin and left in 2013 as the school's all-time leader in blocks. He was a second-team All-Big Ten selection, and he's also a member of the All-Conference defensive team. So it's part of the reason why his basketball camps are becoming popular and why I wanted to have him on right before the start of the Big Ten and NCAA tournament. I welcome Jared Bergeron to the podcast. Hello, Jared. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Like I told you before we started recording, your social media had some really, I thought, interesting topics and takes on some players on this Wisconsin team, and certainly about confidence. And you look at confidence with Wisconsin right now, that's kind of one of the things that they have been battling through the last couple months. But I want to start with the hot topic of the week, and that's the last 2 minutes of the Iowa and Wisconsin game. And there's a lot to unpeel here, and I talked a little bit about it earlier. But I wanted to start with the hook and hold rule, which wasn't a thing when you were battling in the post not too long ago and having to kind of corral all Big Ten forwards on both ends of the floor. I'm curious, how often did defenders utilize that technique or try to utilize that technique without the watchful eye of officials? And do you think that the hook and hold, did that warrant a rule being put in the books that has kind of become controversial to a degree in terms of Wisconsin?
So I mean, the end of that game was crazy. I wasn't able to watch it live. I was in the gym, but I saw all the videos on social media, all the debate about it. Jay Billis and all these high up people tweeting about it, saying how it was such a crazy incident. I mean, I think I saw what Coach Collin had to say after, and it's he was saying it's something that happens all the time, and you break down the videos and look at it, it's like, well, yeah, you see this stuff and it looks bad. You're calling flagrant fouls on things that years ago weren't even calls at all. So it's, I mean, I think there's a, there is a player safety element to it, where you want to keep guys safe and you want to eliminate, I think back to Kevin Love getting his shoulder ripped out in a similar situation with someone, hooking onto his arm and playing, yanking him in a ring. So, yeah, of course you don't want things like that to happen, but, the vast majority of them, it's just kind of jostling for position and, you break these things down in slow motion. You're like, okay, now it looks bad. That's by rule here. Yeah, that's a foul or a flagrant foul or whatever, but I think it's, I think we've definitely gone too far with it, that we're overanalyzing things that are really, kind of meaningless, harmless plays that, it's ruining the flow of games, and that's, I don't think anyone likes to see that. So, yeah, I think they've definitely gone too far with it.
There's also a popular conspiracy theory about official Bo Borowski having a vendetta against Brad Davison in Wisconsin, considering Borowski was involved in that call, and then the Dimitri Trice foul call that really kind of changed the game. And the Badgers were 0-7 in Big Ten games he officiated, so people like to point that out too. Now, I think he's not a great official, but that's not the question I have for you. And you played in 5 years in the Big Ten, or were involved in 5 Big Ten years. How much did an official get talked about amongst you and the players before a game, during, or after a game? One particular official, multiple times I'm referring to. Did it ever come up? Did you ever have a situation like that?
Yeah, I would say, it comes up that we would be aware of, kind of what different referees' tendencies are and how guys kind of like to call things. But honestly, from a personal standpoint, I probably paid attention to the refs less, on an individual basis like that. Like I remember after games, guys would be like, oh yeah, and then so-and-so made this call, and so-and-so. And for me, I was always, I just, my focus was elsewhere. I wasn't paying attention to to who was making what calls, more, you know, trying to just focus on what's going on in the game. And, you know, you certainly have to react to the way things are called, but I never paid attention to the individual tendencies as much as, you know, some of my other teammates did, for sure. So you know, like I said, personally, I didn't, you know, pay as much attention to it, but it's definitely a factor that you have to be able to adjust and kind of know what these guys look at. And when it's been something that's happened as frequently as it has, but, you know, with Bo and Brad especially, it's, you know, it's something I don't know if you have to just adjust the way you play, or, you know, you try to pick those battles a little bit like Coach Garrett does. And, you know, obviously Bo Ryan always was pretty good at picking those battles and needling those reps and trying to get things going their way. But it's part of the game. It's a challenge. And, you know, you like to see the refs, you know, a good ref is not noticed, you know. So when refs become the center of attention, I don't think anyone wants that. And, you know, so it's a challenge for sure.
You mentioned something interesting that guys were aware of and you had to adjust. I mean, I understand you adjusting, but at a point too, you just have to play and kind of let the chips fall where they may, because in my opinion, if you adjust too much how you play, that becomes a confidence issue too, and it gets in your head. Like, it feels like an official like a Bo Borowski, who consistently, these 50-50 calls don't always seem to go Wisconsin's way, especially in Brad Davison's case. There's been a number of calls with Borowski that have gone against Davison. It's almost like one of those things where you just have to kind of just grit your teeth and bear it to a degree and kind of let the coach take over, right? Because if you start thinking about it, it could lead to a whole host of other problems.
No, for sure. I mean, you never want to be analyzing every little thing in the game, and that's, you know, that's kind of what I meant by me playing. You know, I wasn't overly focused on those things.
Right.
After the game, when guys would be like, "Oh yeah, and he made this call in the left wing," and I was never paying that much attention to, you know, exactly who was making the calls at the time. So, no, for sure, you have to just go do your thing. But if, you know, when it becomes a pattern, you know, there would be things in practice. You know, I remember back when I was playing that, you know, there were certain, I think at the time it was one specific, you know, travel call, and I don't remember what it was, but I remember breaking it down in video in Brandon, like, what call you're stepping into this, you know, where you're establishing the pivot foot, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there were certain things that would be like, okay, they're tightening down on these calls, and we need to adjust, you know, your footwork on these things or whatever it may be. So, you know, there might be tendencies that, you know, if it's the hook and hold thing, now it's like, okay, they're going to drill that in practice and be like, all right, show your hands, you know, make sure you're not getting tangled up on there, because we're at, you know, they're locking down on players getting hands tied off and things like that. So, you know, there might be things like that you try to drill into practice, but, you know, in the course of the game, like I said, you gotta stay focused on just doing your job, and you can't, you know, think about the ref every single play. You're not gonna get the job done.
You know, every team goes through a funk of some kind, especially in Big Ten play when the league is so good like it was this year. And not to bring up a negative, but your senior season, it was a challenge. I think from late January until the season was over, for the roster to put the ball through the hoop consistently. In the final 22 games of your season, you guys scored in the 40s seven times, including three straight games. When it's clear the offense isn't functioning the way it needs to for the long-term success, how did Bo, Coach Ryan, Coach Gard, and you as the players try to approach the problem? Was it talked about a lot and made I don't want to say a bigger issue that was, but was it addressed to a higher degree? Or did you just have to try to rely on what the system is and hope that some looks finally go into the basket?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. You gotta find a balance. It's, you know, you can't ignore things. If there's things that you're not doing well that are leading to the poor results, you have to try to adjust it. But at the same time, if you, you know, overanalyze things, it's, you know, it can kind of become paralysis by analysis. You know, you overthink things when you're pressing, you know, mentally, and you're not, you know, playing in the flow of the game. So, you know, I remember my senior year coming in specifically, you know, with Coach Close or whatever it may be, you know, coming in before practice, getting up a bunch of extra shots, just trying to get some rhythm, you know, trying to build some confidence in your shooting touch and everything like that. You know, Coach Ryan would just kind of keep plugging away, and, you know, one of his sayings he'd always have was, you know, the game's not going to change, we're not going to change, you know, what we're doing here, we're going to keep looking to get good, you know, high-quality shots, and, you know, if we're, you know, moving the ball and setting good screens and doing things that we want to do offensively, you know, at the end of the day, you got to live with the results of, you know, what the shot is. But we'd always, you know, kind of break down, you know, what we did here was, did we end up getting a good shot? Did we execute, you know, offensively what we wanted to get? And if we did all those things and, you know, and you just miss the shot, it kind of is what it is. I mean, you can try to, you know, you can't scream a guy into making shots. You can't say, oh, make a shot. You know, at the end of the day, that's not going to build confidence and, you know, find that rhythm to be able to score. So you got to look at what you're doing, you know, from an execution standpoint and kind of live with the results. So confidence is a funny thing. You know, sometimes you're world beaters and you're hitting everything and everything feels good. And then, you know, you start missing more shots and it can become contagious. So, you know, it can flip, you know, like a switch. But you never know when it comes and goes. You got to just keep plugging away and, you know, just try to find the right path.
Yeah, confidence is such a fragile but vital characteristic of a team. And, yeah, in human nature, doubt creeps in. I mean, I would think a doubt would creep into the locker room when poor shooting results in multiple losses. I mean, you see that the good looks that this team is taking, looks that they've hit before, they don't fall. And players have said what you've said. You know, you just have to stick with the script and keep, you know, doing what we're doing, and the shots will eventually fall. But how hard was it for you to kind of shake out doubts you had in yourself, your teammates, or anything else when in the heat of a game where you're playing well, you're getting those shots, and you don't see them fall and you have to run back on defense after another miss? How tough is that, or how tough was that to kind of try to compartmentalize, okay, that possession's over, it's the next possession, and not let it kind of snowball?
Yeah, for sure. It's super tough. I mean, that's the, you know, that's the game right there. It's a make or miss game. And it's, you know, one of the things I posted on my social media recently, and it was something, you know, so I'm working as a basketball trainer now and working with young kids and trying to help them through these struggles. I've had a lot of kids, you know, that I work with reach out to me and say, you know, they're going through the same kind of thing. You know, they don't feel confident, they're losing playing time, whatever it may be. And, you know, one of the things I posted was talking about, you know, finding confidence from other things besides the ball going through the hoop. You know, so there's a lot of ways to impact the game, and, you know, you can have a big imprint on the game by doing other things, by rebounding, you know, defending, setting a good screen, making a good pass, running the floor, whatever it may be. You know, so my advice is to kind of, you know, find those little things, you know, focus on one, you know, mini victory, I call it, where you do one little thing well. Okay, you did your job on this play. Now can I do my job on another, you know, tiny little piece of the game? And, you know, don't worry about, oh, I only have 2 points on, you know, I shot 1 of 6 so far. Like, I can't miss the next one. Well, if that's your mindset, you know, you're putting yourself in a hole, right? Where you got to look at, you know, like I said, break it down to one little thing, you know, try to do that well. And then eventually, you know, you kind of snowball it into finding your rhythm and finding some success. And then, you know, once you make a couple shots, then, you know, things can start rolling again. But at the same time, you can't take that mindset of, okay, when you screw one of those things up and then let it snowball the other way of, oh, I threw a bad pass, or I, you know, I got beat defensively, and, you know, you can't let it snowball there. So it's hard, man. The game is, you know, it's a large portion. It's mental. You know, you can do all the physical work and have the, you know, the body and the skills and all these things, but if you don't master that mental aspect of it, you know, it's probably the hardest part of the game, is just to deal with those highs and lows, and, you know, trying to stay consistent through it. So it's tough, but, you know, what gives me hope with this Badger team is, you know, look at what they did last year. They were in such a bad place. I was at the game last year when they played at Minnesota. You know, it seemed like the wheels were falling off, the whole program was going to implode, and then all of a sudden, they turned the page and they started really rallying around each other, and they wanted that awesome run to finish the season. So, you know, it's mostly all those same guys in the locker room now that they've been through bad stretches before, and they showed that they're able to turn the page and, you know, rally and come together and win. So, you know, things haven't been going well for them right now, but, you know, they've been through it before. They're an experienced group that, you know, you hope they can kind of find that same groove again and make a run through the end of the season here.
Again, we're talking with Wisconsin, former Wisconsin Senator Jared Bergen here on the podcast. And Jared, as a former player, what simple things are fans failing to realize or take into account of why Wisconsin is struggling this year? I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Kohl Center, which is usually packed, has been virtually empty this year, and it's hard to kind of tap into that that fan support that Wisconsin has had such good fan support, great fan support for so long. And two, just the quarantining and just this self-isolation, it's you and your teammates all the time and not really have that interaction on campus. How big of a deal was that when you played, when you guys were rolling in the Big Ten, 21 seasons, 12, 13 wins in Big Ten play every year? How tough is that to kind of think back and not pretend you didn't have that? How tough would that be?
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine, you know, because like you said, we always played in front of a packed crowd and, you know, tons of energy and support and everything. So, you know, to play in these empty gyms has got to be a very strange situation. But it's funny you bring that up because I was actually just talking yesterday with a college girl who just finished her freshman season, and she was saying she was, you know, went through some struggles this year, and part of it, I was saying, well, part of it is you probably didn't really have an escape. You know, she went there, didn't really know what to expect, didn't have a usual freshman year, you know, and it's you just had basketball, you didn't, you know, have any, you know, in-person classes, everything was online. You weren't really meeting people like, you know, what we do, you weren't making new friends, you know, the team, you know, had a so-so season, and individually so-so season, but, you know, so part of that is, yeah, being able to have an escape and a release where if all you have is basketball and then get into those ruts, you know, you don't have something else to go to and, you know, friends away from basketball that you're going to, you know, whatever, going to watch a football game or going to do anything, right? Like, be a normal college kid. Like, there's balance you should have that, you know, is good for you to focus with that. So, you know, like I said, I can only imagine because I'm not in that situation. But, you know, not having a sense of normalcy can definitely, you know, take a toll on those kids. I'm sure. And, you know, another aspect I think is kind of just changing roles on the team. So I think especially like for Nate Reavers, like Nate was, you know, he was kind of the guy in the middle for a couple of years. And then with Micah coming in last year, you know, they were able to balance it, you know, for the most part and play well together and complement each other. And as Micah's come on more and more, I mean, it's hard at times for them to play together. Just, you know, most teams don't have two big guys that they can match up well with. And, you know, so if Micah's come on, that's changed Nate's role. And, you know, when you're in a situation with changing roles like that, it can be hard to balance and find, you know, your own groove and what you were before. And I think, you know, Brad Davison's kind of had the same thing where you look back to Brad's freshman year, he was, you know, once we had all those injuries, he was really the playmaker. He had the ball in his hands all the time. And then as Trice has continued to get better and better, and, you know, Jonathan Davis or whoever, right, as guys develop and change, you know, your role is going to change. And, you know, being able to adjust to that is another challenge. I think fans in general, you know, don't necessarily look at those things as much as or don't understand how those dynamics play out within a team. And, you know, obviously I think those guys are all good guys that they all, you know, want their teammates to do well. But at the same time, when your teammate does well, you know, it can take away from your own goal, and that can be hard to deal with at times. So, you know, I think those are some of the issues that may be affecting them a little bit. And, you know, like I said, they went through it already last year from struggling to turning the page and having success. So, you know, I'm optimistic that they can find that again and it's strong, but it's a challenge for sure.
It also feels like, Jared, there's kind of been like a seismic shift in the Big Ten from three guards and two bigs, which is typical of how you guys used to play, to kind of four versatile guards and a mobile post center. And I think that also has impacted Nate Reavers to a degree. And to me, the makeup of the Big Ten teams feels different. And as a result, the Big Ten this year might be the best conference the game has seen in several years. How do you think the game has changed in the last 5 years between the typical, you know, five positions, two forwards, to now more quicker and faster pace and more mobile in terms of that low post big? And is it still a back to the basket game in the low post because of that?
No, I mean the back to the basket stuff is definitely, you know, kind of phasing its way out of the game right now. I mean, there's still, you know, there's still teams that do it, and you can still be successful doing it for sure. But, you know, everything is about kind of pace and space. You know, everyone's shooting threes, even big guys. And we did that, obviously. Like, we shot threes as well as our big men shot threes. But now it's, you know, it's more to a different level where, you know, I could step out and shoot it, but I wasn't doing a whole lot, you know, outside of it in terms of, like, playmaking. You know, I maybe attack a closeout and you know, drive to the rim, but it wasn't, you know, as skillful as a lot of these players are doing things now. So the game is evolving that way for sure. Everyone, you know, wants to play on the perimeter. Everyone wants to get up and down. And so it's, yeah, you gotta be able to adapt a little bit. And like I said, with Potter and Levers, you know, trying to pair those guys together, it's a challenge, you know. Especially defensively, just to defend stuff like that is hard. And that's, you know, kind of what I'm doing now is, you know, working with young players, and it's, you know, everything is so positionless where every, you know, no matter how big you are, what size you are, position you are, like, everyone wants to be able to handle the ball, everyone wants to be able to shoot, you know. And like I said, those were some of the things we worked on already, you know, 10 years ago when I was. It's, you know, it's to a new level now, and the game continues to advance, and it, you know, it becomes harder. You know, you don't see teams scoring in the 40s, but, you know, things are more up and down, more high scoring, more skillful, and high level. So it's a tough, you know, tough way to adapt, but you know, they got their hands full in this league for sure.
You posted on Twitter at jbergren40, for those that want to follow you, that you were impressed with Tyler Wall's growth this season. Kind of explain further, if you will, what caught your eye with Wall, who's from your neck of the woods up there in Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, I think last year he showed flashes of just, you know, being a smart, you know, kind of tough player. And, you know, he'd do all the little things that Wisconsin basketball has valued for so long of, you know, being able to stick your nose in there and fight for loose balls and, you know, just battle defensively, get on the glass, all those little things. And now he's just kind of taking that next step where, you know, he's found a little bit more consistency in his outside shot, you know, maybe consistency wasn't the right word, but he's showing more ability in his outside shot. You know, I think he could still improve that consistency in terms of that. But, you know, and then just growing his game where now he's, you know, attacking off the catch a little bit more and getting to the rim and doing some things that, you know, with the ball in his hands that, you know, he maybe wasn't doing last year. But I know, you know, I was with Joe Krabanoff and some other, you know, former teammates before the season started in the fall, and talking, he was really impressed with him and all those, you know, younger guys that are kind of stepping up and, you know, showing their growth and improvement. So there's, you know, there's definitely, with this big senior class, it's going to be strange next year, assuming all those guys leave. I guess we'll see what happens if they come back or not. But assuming those guys leave and, you know, some of these younger guys are thrown into a new world next year, you know, I think the future of Wisconsin basketball is going to be exciting for sure.
Yeah, for the last 2-plus years, you've kind of mentioned, too, you're doing training now. You've been working with Catalyst Training. Explain how you transitioned to the company once your professional playing career was done, and what kind of attracted you to the ability to teach young kids on how to play the game. And I don't want to say necessarily play it the Wisconsin way, but it is kind of the Wisconsin way, because the way Wisconsin plays basketball is very rooted in core fundamentals, and that's a good basis, I think, for young kids to have.
Yeah, for sure. So kind of my path to get here was a couple of years into my career playing overseas. I started working with a guy, Reed Osi. Actually, I first met him working Badger basketball camps in the summer. So he's from Minnesota. He used to come out there and work the camps in the summer. And we were like Facebook friends, right? So I didn't like really know him, but we were friends on Facebook. And then, you know, towards the end of one of my seasons overseas, I saw him posting a bunch of videos online, and he actually went out to, you know, like New Jersey area training out there. He was coming back to Minnesota, and he was running some camps out there. And I sent him a message like, "Hey, I need someone to work out with. Like, let's get in the gym." And, you know, I started training with him, and Cole Aldrich was another guy that, you know, we used to work out together a lot. And Reed is really good. Works with the high level players in Minnesota. College guys, NBA guys, ton of high school teams in the area. And, you know, so I started working with him, and, you know, as I started learning that side of the game, you know, he would point out details that, you know, were I had never really thought about, you know, exact, you know, foot positioning and what you're doing with your muscle arm and how you're shifting your weight and how you're finishing, you know, your angles and all these different things where, you know, it was really just interesting to me to be able to grow my skill set like that. And it was something I wish I was, you know, exposed to his level of detail, you know, earlier on. And especially in my, you know, once I started playing overseas. And then as I, you know, went through my career playing, you know, I started having kids. My daughter is about 3.5 now. And so she was born right before I went to Japan. I had to leave actually like 2 weeks after she was born, and then they joined me a bit later. And honestly, I went through kind of a rough season there where it was a pretty poor fit just in terms of style of play. And I didn't play very well and I ended up getting cut. And when I came home, the middle of the season, it was like January, and I came back and worked out with Reed. And, you know, I was in a really bad place mentally, struggling with confidence, all the stuff we kind of talked about here. And he was kind of helping me dig out of it. And, you know, then he was talking, I was, you know, going over there with my daughter felt different, like taking her away from family and friends back home, and everything was hard. And he was like, well, what do you want to do if you don't keep playing? I was like, I want to do what you do. Like, I love this. Like, helping, you know, young players get better. It's such a rewarding experience for me to stay around the game and, you know, like I said, kind of pass on the knowledge I've gained over my year to help young players get better is so fun for me. You know, so I started working with him, and then that following summer, I ended up going back to Japan, finished my season out there with a different team, and came back that summer, started work with them a little bit, and then I went overseas for one more year to Switzerland. You know, I didn't want to end on that sour note like that, so I went to Switzerland, played one more year, and then, like I said, as my daughter got older, you know, it just got harder and harder as she was, you know, knowing who her grandparents are and things like that, asking to go see them, and we're like, well, we're over here for, you know, 4 more months before we can go home and see them. You know, that was hard. So the following summer, you know, I started, you know, growing the business more and more with Reed, doing the training thing, and then, you know, I turned down some offers to go back overseas and have been here, you know, in Minnesota doing the training stuff now, and kind of getting my name out there, getting connected with different high school programs in the area, you know, youth programs, working with, you know, college players, kind of the whole spectrum of, you know, levels of players here. And like I said, just trying to help out, you know, these young players and pass on what I've learned, and, you know, see them grow is really fun for me, really rewarding. And, you know, I'm staying active, staying in the gym, doing what I love to do, and, you know, making a career out of it. So it's, you know, it's a really fun thing for me right now.
Have you learned from your 2 years, is it harder to teach young players the physical aspect or the mental aspect of the game?
I would say it depends on the kid. So I think if you go young, if you go like middle school level, I think it's more physical. But I think at that level, generally, kids have, you know, they're putting less pressure on themselves. They're enjoying the game more, which is good. It's what you want, right? They're more playing for fun. They're not beating themselves up as much about, you know, wins and losses and missing shots and whatnot. And then as you get older, you know, I think even, you know, to like the varsity level, you know, a lot of my guys there are, you know, they're starting to feel the pressure of, you know, trying to, you know, go play college basketball and things like that. You know, when they start struggling, they're questioning their ability to do that. They're questioning, you know, coaches' decisions, and there's just a little bigger spotlight on them. You know, you get to the varsity level, and, you know, so it's, I think there you start dealing a little bit more with the mental aspect. You know, it's different for every kid, obviously, but, you know, I think the mental side of things is, especially recently, I feel like for me, it's been, you know, I've had more and more cases with kids like that where I'm trying to help them through it. You know, I went through a lot of the same struggles myself, like I said, especially my year in Japan when I was, you know, I wasn't playing very well, I wasn't very happy, and, you know, I was trying to find ways to dig myself out of that hole a little bit. So, it's, again, rewarding for me to, you know, share my experiences with these kids and, you know, be vulnerable a little bit and tell them, you know, it's not all, you know, rainbows and butterflies here, but, you know, you're going to go through struggles and it's going to be hard sometimes. And, you know, you might even want to quit sometimes, but you got to find your motivation and find, you know, these kind of small successes, like I said, and try to just keep at it, keep pushing, keep working, and, you know, dig your way out. It's, you know, I think my experiences, it helps me relate to these kids where I'm not, you know, someone that's never done it and just telling you, but it's, you know, I feel for you because I've been there and I know what it feels like. So it's something that I think definitely helps me of, you know, going through those struggles was never fun when I did it, but now looking back, you know, there's things that I'm almost thankful for. It's, you know, now it's helping me help others, and I think that's what's great about the game, and there's such a you know, kind of a brotherhood in the game of sharing your experiences and connecting with people, and, you know, like I said, really, really rewarding experience for me.
If people want to learn more about your training opportunities, Jared, where can they go?
You can find me on social media, you know, on Twitter or Instagram, at jbergen40, or on our website, basketballcatalyst.com. We have information there on, camps, clinics, things like that. If you're in the Minnesota area, you know, I do, you know, individual, small group, team training, you know, kind of all different options here. So send me a message. I'd love to connect and, you know, like I said, keep helping kids out and keep helping kids improve.
Great stuff, Jared. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me.
That's good stuff from Jared Bergen. And if you're a young basketball player or you're a parent to a young basketball player, look at Jared's Twitter. He posts some really good things and posts some little video clips that I think were really impressive. That's part of the reason why I reached out to him, and I really appreciate the time. We were only going to talk for about 15, 20 minutes. I think, you know, we went close to 30, and really good stuff from Jared, and I really appreciate having him on to wrap up our podcast for this week. For all the latest on Wisconsin football, basketball, and recruiting, log on to BadgerBlitz.com. Follow me on Twitter at TheBadgerNation. For all the latest on Pro Day, on Wisconsin basketball's postseason run, all the good stuff you can find, of course, will be at BadgerBlitz.com. Thank you, as always, for listening and for downloading this show. I really appreciate your loyal listenership over the last couple weeks and months. We'll be back next week. We will preview the NCAA tournament to hopefully see what Wisconsin can do. What kind of damage can they do in the national tournament now that they won't be facing a Big Ten team each and every week? Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy the nice weather that's finally coming to the state of Wisconsin. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you soon here on the BadgerBlitz.com podcast.